All right, beautiful people. That was a lament for Palestine. It was played at a protest in Scotland, and you are listening to The Michael Slate Show. I'm your guest host, Sansara Taylor, and today's show begins with a commentary from Andy Z, the host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on youtube.com/therevcoms. Andy is looking at events of just the past 7 days and examining why an actual revolution aimed at the emancipation of all of humanity from every form of oppression and exploitation is not only necessary, but more possible in these times. After that, we'll hear from Michelle Chai, who is a leader in the Revolution Clubs. She is speaking about the Revolution Nothing Less Week, which we are in the middle of right now, which is a nationwide week of efforts to get real revolution known everywhere. That will be followed by Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader and author of The New Communism, speaking about why revolutionary state power is a great thing, why we should want state power, why this power, if it is wielded by the right class and the right interests, is very liberating and much needed. Then I will deliver a commentary on the U.S.-backed Israeli slaughter and genocide against the Palestinian people trapped in Gaza. And finally, Atlas Winfrey will introduce a discussion that followed a recent screening of the Bob Avakian interviews at a theater up in Hollywood, California. And we'll hear Andy Z and myself, again, Sansara Taylor, in discussion with the moderator, David Zeiger. So let's dive in with this show at this incredibly intense crisis point for humanity. This is Andy Z speaking to exactly that.
We're living in a moment when unspeakable horrors are being piled upon great horror. This past week, Israel's bloodlust vengeance against the Palestinian people in Gaza shocked the conscience of millions. And with the impending ground invasion threatening to spill into wider regional and even world war, scientists analyzing the climate changes of the last year issued a terrifying report. And on Wednesday, a Christian fascist fanatic was elected to be Speaker of the House of Representatives, accelerating the drive to fascism and further cleaving the divide among the rulers and all throughout society. This is a moment of conspicuous change, a time in which Bob Avakian has analyzed that, quote, the crisis and the deep divisions in society now can only be resolved through radical means of one kind or another, either radically reactionary, murderously oppressive and destructive means, or radically emancipating and revolutionary means, end quote. For there to be an emancipating future requires a real revolution to overthrow the system of capitalism imperialism that is the cause of all the nightmares that humanity faces. The very extremeness of the times, with people's lives upended and millions unsure of what tomorrow will bring, and especially that sharp divide among the rulers such that they can no longer govern in the way that people have been conditioned to accept, all of this opens the possibility for revolution. This requires making this revolution known, why it is necessary, why it is possible, what's the strategy and the plan to win, the goal and the vision of the new society that's in the Constitution for a new socialist republic in North America, written by Bob Avakian, and the very fact that we have leadership in Bob Avakian. All this needs to be known. And after this commentary, Michelle Chai of the Revolution Club here in Los Angeles will be talking about plans for a major week from October 28th through November 5th that all of us, each of us, and each of you watching, and all the people we can reach and gather need to throw in with the biggest way you can to make a real advance in this revolution now. But first, I want to speak about three developments of the past week and underscore that each of these events not only heightens the urgency of making revolution, but also, though this is more hidden, heightens the basis to make real leaps and advances in getting this revolution known and taken up by growing numbers of people now. At the top of the call for this upcoming Revolution Nothing Less week is this: climate, war, fascism. The future of humanity is endangered. These are three sharpening fault lines, each of which have set humanity on a collision course with disaster, potentially including the destruction of humanity, and each of which along with all the other forms of exploitation and oppression of people here and around the world, cry out for and opens the potential for the masses of people to demand a whole new way to live in a fundamentally different system. This past week, the publication Bioscience, produced by the American Institute of Biological Sciences, published their 2023 climate report. It begins with this. Listen to this. Quote, "Life on planet Earth is under siege. We are now in uncharted territory. We are entering a situation no one has ever witnessed firsthand in the history of humanity," end quote. The report then goes into extensive scientific analysis of the last year of floods, fires, heat, and more, concluding with this, quote, "As scientists, we are increasingly being asked to tell the public the truth about the crises we face in simple and direct terms. The truth is that we are shocked by the ferocity of the extreme weather events in 2023. We are afraid of the uncharted territory that we have now entered," end quote. This is humanity's alarm clock going off once more after hitting the snooze button too many damn times. We have shown in past episodes of the RNL show that capitalism, imperialism is at the root of the global warming, and only a revolution for a radically different socialist system can create a sustainable way of life. The second word that opens the call for the Revolution Nothing Less Week headline is this: war. Sansara will be detailing just some of what has happened in Gaza during the last week. Rarely in history has there been such a genocidal siege and devastation of millions of people locked in a small area and pulverized from above, starved of food, water, and medicine. And for all the horror of what is being done to the Palestinian masses trapped in this killing field, this conflict now has the potential to spin into a wider war, a regional war, and even a global war. And President Biden has linked support for the Israel genocide to support for Ukraine, and in his request for war funds, even linked this to threatening China as well. Yet what is going down in Gaza has prompted millions around the world and many thousands here in the U.S. to take to the streets, including, very heroically, sections of Jewish people who are standing up against the bullshit lie that being opposed to the Zionist state of Israel is anti-Semitism. It is not. The United States' total support and barely concealed active participation in the Israeli war in Gaza will continue to propel people to question and to stand up for justice. This is extremely important, but there can be no lasting justice, no peaceful future, and no respect for all life under this system. Those who understand this must not squander this moment. We must act together now, not only against what is being done in our name, but most decisively and with great urgency and revolutionary passion to impact society and organize masses of people into the revolution now. And there is real potential to do so. But that will require a lot of struggle with the very people who need this revolution. And this past week, there have been developments in the consolidation and initiative of the Fascist Republican Party. Last week, I spoke of the unprecedented period where there was no leadership of the House of Representatives in Congress as the most fascist, Trumpian section of the Republican Party fought to put in one of their own as Speaker. They succeeded on Wednesday, voting Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana to be the Speaker of the House, next in line to be President after the Vice President. Speaker Mike Johnson is a theocratic, Dark Ages Christian fascist fanatic. He calls homosexuality inherently unnatural. He opposes abortions fanatically. He fought to overturn Biden's election. He believes that God has ordained him and Trump to rule, and Trump pushed for Johnson's election and got his way. Immediately after Mike Johnson became Speaker of the House, the Democratic leader of the Senate, Chuck Schumer, called on Johnson to be bipartisan and work together to govern responsibly.
If Speaker Johnson chooses the bipartisan path, we can do great things for the American people, just as we did last Congress with an evenly divided Senate and a narrowly divided House. I look forward to working constructively with Speaker Johnson and congratulate him on his election.
There you have it. Chuck Schumer, who is perhaps the Senate's biggest backer of Israel's genocidal assault on the Palestinian people, reaches across the aisle to this fascist. Biden, Schumer, the fascist Republicans, the whole ruling class are, as Babavakian has said, quoting Malcolm X's powerful statement, quote, bloody-jawed wolves, end quote, with the blood streaming out of their mouths while they hypocritically speak of freedom and rights and even dare to talk about peace. And Babavakian has also said, quote, all of this and everything that is happening with the developing situation involving Palestine and Israel, along with Biden's push to heighten the danger of war with Russia and China, and how this further shines a light on the very nature of U.S. capitalism and imperialism, highlights once more the crucial truth that we, the people of the world, quote,
we can no longer afford to allow these imperialists to dominate the world and to determine the destiny of humanity. They need to be overthrown as quickly as possible.
And Babavakian has also said it is a scientific fact that we do not have to live this way. In light of all that I have spoken of, the revolution nothing less week must not be a time of just small incremental advances for the movement for revolution. This can and must be a time when we are making big leaps in impacting society and organizing people into the revolution. The situation is urgent, and it also opens up the possibility for more and more people to get with the revolution.
That was Andy Z, the host of the Revolution Nothing Less show. Next, we're going to hear from Michelle Chai. She is a leader of the Revolution Clubs, and she'll be speaking about the Revolution Nothing Less Week, nationwide efforts to get real revolution known everywhere. And she's being interviewed by Pete Ha.
Hey, this is Pete. I'm with the RNL team, and today I have the opportunity to interview Michelle Chai of the Revolution Clubs.
Hello.
So, Michelle, we have in store for us a very exciting week coming up, Revolution Nothing Less Week. Let the audience know about what's going on.
Yeah, so from this week of October 28th to November 5th, we are calling on you to be part of putting this revolution in front of millions of people everywhere. Because look, let's just confront, the world is on fire. The Earth's climate devastation, the threat of nuclear war, you know, this horrific genocidal war that's, you know, being waged on the people of Gaza. You know, you literally pull up your phone and you can watch a genocide being carried out right before our eyes, you know. And this is, you know, these are very intense times. And, you know, and we understand from a scientific understanding that all of these horrors are rooted in a system of capitalism, imperialism that has to be overthrown at the soonest possible time. And here we are, a year into the 2024 elections, you know, where things are sharpening up and we're coming from behind. You know, this week we're going to take a major step in actually getting out there with revolution, nothing less, up against all these dead ends and the ways that people are being led in all sorts of directions, because, you know, things are shaping up in a way where we have to be prepared to lead the masses of people to go where it's needed, which is a real overthrow of this system, nothing less.
So I was just looking at revcom.us and I saw that we have a flyer and then we have some slogans. You spoke to the climate war, fascism, the future of humanity is endangered. Join the nationwide efforts to get real revolution known everywhere. Say a little bit about the next ones.
You know, this is part of how we're going to get out and like and struggle with people, you know, is live by and fight for the points of attention, the code of the revolution. Get with Babavakian, BA, the leadership we have for the revolution we need. Stand against the U.S.-backed Israeli war on Palestine. We need and we demand a new emancipating way to live, a fundamentally different system. So, you know, people can go to revcom.us, download those, you know, the flyer of that, spread that, put them up on the wall everywhere. But this revolution, this leadership of Babavakian has to become, you know, the authority that people are looking to and following, you know, not any of these like, you know, dead ends, not, you know, people need to, you know, all the time right now, people are saying, well, it's Biden or Trump. People need to see it's this system of capitalism or revolution. That's the terms that we're out to set in society right now with these points of attentions, opening up the you know, debate and discussion, people engaging the leadership of Babavakian. You know, we know the difference that it makes when people actually come together and watch these interviews and get to know the leader of this revolution and see that there's an inspiring vision of a whole different way that we could be living, you know, and you know, and Babavakian has spoken to this also, you know, is the this is part of a nationwide movement, you know, and part of also what we're going to be doing this week is doing messages of support for the people, you know, in Palestine, right, with banners with the slogans of from the ghettos and barrios of the U.S. to Palestine, the people of the world need revolution, nothing less. Taking this everywhere, you know, and having all kinds of people sign it, you know, and marching with this, you know, all throughout the week, you know, and with this message of the only real solution that's going to be able to deal with all these things that are happening in the world right now is an actual emancipating revolution.
Yeah, Babavakian has said, look, we got two futures. Either things are going to go radically something terrible or something truly emancipating. That's really on us here, you know. And not only that, but people got to donate, you know. If you're thinking about these things going up on the walls and including people and the film screenings and, you know, the studio here in terms of the RNL show, it's going to actually take funds. And people here should go to the comment section right now and put in your ideas. How are you actually going to be a part of this, you know? Who are you going to bring in? You know, and how are we going to go out and really struggle like hell with people?
Well, I think that's really important, you know, as a very, you know, simple entryway, you know, for people to be raising funds, to donate to this, to go to everyone this whole week and be asking for funds, you know. And I think also another entryway that, you know, that we should be putting to everybody we're meeting this week is live by and fight for these points of attention for the revolution. You know, that's going to be a struggle. And people have said, you know, to us, that's a mother to break with, you know, some of what's in the points of attention. Because look, we're all trained to, you know, think in the ways of this oppressive system. We're all trained to, like, you know, these ways of thinking, you know, so these points of attention are going up against that. And one of the things that Babavakian has said is that people don't recognize how putrid this culture and the ways that people relate to each other are until something is put in contrast to that, you know? Yeah. And it made me think about
the story to that.
Yeah, and it made me think about my experience where, you know, coming out of watching the Revolution Nothing Less speech from 2012, one of the very first things I wrote was something along the lines of this speech made me change the way I look. It changed the way I looked at everything. Right. And I kind of, you know, was listening to music, watching movies, watching TV, going out in the world, seeing billboards, you know, and kind of going, damn, all of this is f-ed up. You know, it's like, you know, all this that I would listen to, that I would celebrate, that I would uphold, that I would repeat, all this homophobic, all this, you know, bitches and hoes this and all kinds of up things, you know, and it didn't hit me, you know. It wasn't that I was out there, like, you know, like in a nasty way upholding that. I just had gotten so, like, that was just my way of existence, you know. And it wasn't until it was, you know, until I heard BA, you know, contrasting that to a whole different way that people can be, that we don't have to degrade women in the music, that we don't have to, you know, say and repeat all these homophobic jokes, you know, even if they're supposedly jokes, you know, that's one of the things that the points of attention get into, you know. Number two, you know, says we fight for a world where all the chains are broken. Women, men, and differently gendered people are equals and comrades. We do not tolerate physically or verbally abusing women or treating them as sexual objects, nor do we tolerate insults or jokes about people's gender or sexual orientation, you know. And this is, you know, when you think about the people, you know, all kinds of people that don't even know that they're celebrating the chains of oppression, that they're going along with the chains of oppression, to be confronted with, we have to break these chains and represent and fight for and model a whole different way of living as part of bringing that world into being right now, you know, and that they can actually be part of that starting now, you know, that this, you know, this is what we're working on this week, y'all.
Yeah. Now I want to be a part of that. You know, I'm looking forward to this week. So any last words, Michelle?
Yeah, last words is join us wherever you are, October 28th to November 5th, Revolution Nothing Less Week. Start, you know, go on our website, revcom.us, download the Points of Attention for the Revolution, download the Bob Avakian Provocations, get out starting right away, start getting them up on the walls, capture people's attention with these slogans, with these provocations, right? And get connected with people, you know, wherever you are in the country, right? But you're part of a nationwide week, right? So send us pictures, send us ideas, send us what it is that you're doing. Gather your friends that Thursday to watch the Revolution Nothing Less show, and you might see some of your pictures that you're sending in up on the show, you know? And get in touch with us, you know, get in touch with us. Let us know what you're doing, what your ideas are. And this, let's go, y'all.
So with that, I'm down for it. Let's go.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. That was Michelle Chai, a leader of the Revolution Clubs, being interviewed by Pete Ha. And next, we are going to hear from Bob Avakian, who is a revolutionary leader and author of The New Communism. He addresses in this excerpt a very controversial question: why state power in the hands of the right people is a very good thing. This is an excerpt from the Bob Avakian interviews, which originally aired on the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show, available in full on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/therevcoms.
So we wanted to start right out with asking you, you have made the bold statement that it is right to want state power, that state power in the hands of the right people and the right class is a great thing. And to wildly understate it, this is not how most people think about state power. Why is that? Why is state power a great thing?
Well, you have to begin with what you referred to, you know, in the hands of the right class of people, the right kind of state power based on the right kind of system. You know, like one reason why a lot of people may not think state power is so great is because they're living under the exercise of it by these monstrous oppressors. So the idea, you know, the idea is promoted, you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and all this bullshit from some British lord, you know. So, you know, people are, you know, inclined to look at the way things are now and how power is exercised, and have a hard time imagining it could be exercised in a different way by different people. And so the reason I say state power is a great thing is because in order to do all the things that we need to do to uproot all this oppression, you have to have power in society in order to do them. I mean, the reason we can't do them now is because the wrong people, that is a class of exploiters, the capitalist imperialists, have state power and use that state power to suppress any attempt at seriously uprooting all this oppression. So we need a different kind of state power, you know, a socialist state power that, first of all, is radically different in terms of what it's based on, what it's aiming for, and also whom it involves in the exercise of state power. It's involving the masses of people increasingly in playing a, you know, an initiating role and a conscious role in transforming society. And unlike the present system, socialist state power backs up the masses of people in moving to uproot all this oppression, while it also provides leadership to them to see what they're up against, what are the contradictions they have to break through on in order to uproot all this, and how to wage that struggle. So it's a completely different kind of state power. Any idea, just think about it. Any idea that you were going to overthrow the existing system and then you're not going to have any state power, guess what happens? You are going to have state power. It's going to be the state power you just overthrew will be back in power in a quick minute. So the whole idea that you can do without a state, you know, without state power, yes, you need a radically different kind of state power, but you need power to be able to lead masses of people and back them up in making all these transformations. What happens now when people go out? First of all, the state power, I'll just back up a second, will be radically different. You're not going to have a police force that murders people on a daily basis in order to maintain a system of oppression. The police forces, we will need police forces, we will need armed forces to defend the revolution. But these forces will be radically different. They will be the masses of people who have risen up to make the revolution in the first place. That's from whom the police and the armed forces will be drawn. And I've made the statement before. Some people say, "Oh, wait a minute! You're going to take all these people out here running around right now, shooting each other, and selling drugs, and you're going to give them state power?" I don't think so. I don't think I want to be part of that. No, we're not talking about people as they are now. We're talking about people, go back to the question that Andy raised previously in a previous talk, a previous interview we were doing, people as they've been radically transformed, as they've radically transformed themselves on the basis of being struggled with in the course of transforming the world and making revolution. So then, the state power is going to be in the hands of masses of people who've been struggled with to be emancipators of humanity and to make a revolution on that basis. And, there's a lot of experience in the history of revolution, and particularly communist revolution, that we can draw from, that it is possible to transform people. Like when they made the revolution in China, for example, which took a different path, just to be clear, for anybody out there, just to be clear, was a revolution that in those particular circumstances was made by waging armed struggle from the very, very beginning. Armed struggle from the beginning and throughout. That was the character of the Chinese Revolution because of the particular character of Chinese society and the conditions that they were dealing with. Our revolution is different. It's a period of carrying out the three prepares through political and ideological work and, standing up and defending the people and fighting the power, but not attempting to wage an armed struggle until the conditions for that have been brought into being. That's where the three prepares come in. That's what we're working toward, but that's not what we're doing now. But there's still something to learn from the Chinese Revolution. When Mao started up the People's War in China, the armed struggle against the existing oppressive government and the imperialists who were behind it, the U.S. and Britain in particular, he said, "I went to the brave elements, what we might call the brothers and sisters on the street, in our circumstances." He said, "I went to them because they weren't afraid to die." But then a tremendous amount of struggle had to be waged. What's this about? What's this armed struggle for? This is not armed struggle to go out and rip off people. They had to have points of attention, to make sure that the people were adhering to the principles of the revolution and applying the principles of the revolution. Things like you don't take a needle or a thread from the masses of people. You don't go about, this is mainly a male army at that time, although the masses of women did become involved. You don't go abusing women. There are different principles here that have to do with the revolution that we're carrying out. And there was struggle, and that's why they had to have those points of discipline and points of attention. So we're talking about masses of people who've been transformed through struggle and transforming themselves in order to bring about the revolution we're talking about and bring into being the necessary state power. But that state power, once established, will be completely different, radically different. The role of state power and whether it really serves the revolution to emancipate the masses of people or whether it actually constitutes another oppressive force over the masses of people is determined by the content of that state power, by the line, the politics and ideology and program that it's based on and that is leading it. That's how you know, and that's how the masses of people can be led to evaluate what's the character of a state power. Is this state power that's standing above the mass of people and turning into an oppressive force that's going to actually restore the old system of exploitation and oppression? Or is this a state power by its content, by its actions, by the way it's being led, by what it's fighting for, by what's guiding it, is actually backing up and supporting the masses of people in emancipating themselves and supporting the revolution throughout the world toward the same goal of emancipation, uprooting and eliminating all antagonistic conflicts among people, all forms of oppression and exploitation? But that's why state power, yes, I want us to have state power, not the three of us sitting here, but the masses of people who've risen up to make a revolution so that they can carry through what they fought for in that revolution. And yes, so that they can actually back up the masses of people in carrying out those transformations and prevent anyone from actually overthrowing the system that exists and re-enslaving the masses of people. So, you know, this is why state power, socialist state power, is a great thing to have. And it's something we should, you know, everyone who wants to see a more just world should be hungering for this state power, not, you know, worrying about what it'll be like. Yeah, there needs to be a struggle over what it's going to be like, you know, and that will be an ongoing struggle. But we should be primarily hungering for that state power, because that's the power that will enable these transformations I'm talking about. Now, to be clear, since I said it will prevent people from overthrowing the socialist system, that doesn't mean that there won't be allowance for dissent. Doesn't mean that we don't need a lot of intellectual and cultural ferment. We do. That's all embodied in the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America. You know, anyone who raises objections to what the government is doing or what the policies are, or even to the very existence of a socialist state, will be allowed to do so. And there will even be ways that criticism is encouraged and fostered, and dissent, because you need that. You need to know where, what your shortcomings are. And the masses of people need to thrash out what's right and wrong, what will really lead to on the road of emancipation, and what, you know, even though it might say it's doing that, is actually leading back to the old way. So, you know, there'll be a flourishing and even a promotion of dissent. By that I mean even in the, you know, in the arts and the media and so on, provision made for people to have a vehicle to criticize and raise dissent, even while, you know, they, people who try to violently overthrow the new socialist system will be prevented from doing so. Oh, well, you're just like the people in power now. You know, that's what they say. You can dissent as long as you don't try to seriously challenge them. Well, no, we're not just like them. You know, for one thing, they don't encourage and promote dissent. They limit dissent within a very narrow sphere. But second of all, once again, we're back to what's the nature, what's the character of that state power? And the reason we're not like them is because what the state power is for, what it concretely does, what it supports the masses of people in doing, what philosophy or ideology, what program, what politics, what social relations it's all embodying and promoting, which are the complete and direct opposite of what exists under this system. So no, we're not just like them at all. We're radically different.
That was Bob Avakian on why state power, revolutionary state power, is a great thing. Now, we will hear a commentary that I did on the U.S.-Israeli slaughter and genocide against the Palestinian people. And I also want to mention that the website revcom.us, the website of the revolution, is right now indispensable for anyone who is horrified by what is being done to the people of Gaza before the eyes of the world. Anyone trying to understand what's going on, what are its roots, how do we get to a world where wars, genocide, and all the inhumanity that we are seeing right now is ended, not just for the people of Gaza, although very urgently we need that, but everywhere, for all people, so that never again truly is never again for anyone. It is a scientific fact that we do not have to live this way. RevCom.us is providing the understanding of where this comes from and how we can end it. So all of you listening, I invite you to visit that website, to take up the cause. We need the emancipation of all of humanity, and everybody has a role to play. For the past 2.5 weeks, the world has watched a genocide unfold against the Palestinians trapped in Gaza. What is genocide? It is the deliberate killing of a large number of people from a particular nation or ethnic group with the aim of destroying that nation or group. And who has been carrying out this genocide? It is the State of Israel, with the full backing of Biden and the United States. In the last 18 days of Israel's war, the reported death toll of Palestinians in Gaza has grown to more than 6,500. 2,360 of these are children. As we film, a child in Gaza is being killed by Israel with the backing of your government every 7.5 minutes. That is 8 children per hour. And at least twice that many children are being injured. It used to be that many Palestinian families, during the all too frequent Israeli strikes on their land, took up the practice of huddling together and even sleeping in the same room of their homes. This way, if they were struck, they would all die together, rather than suffer the anguish of having some members go on without parents, without partners, or without children. But today, 42% of the homes and other domestic dwellings have been destroyed or damaged across all of Gaza. And half the population, more than 1 million people, have been driven from their homes. So instead, these days, parents have taken to writing the names of their children on their tiny legs in marker. They do this so that their child will be able to be identified if they end up killed, blown apart, or buried in rubble. And this is indeed how many of the dead children are being identified. Stop and imagine having to prepare for such a likelihood. On October 12th, Israel ordered everyone in the northern half of Gaza to leave. An Al Jazeera reporter in Gaza City, which is in the north, said residents had been receiving phone calls saying that they would be considered, quote, a collaborator with terrorism if they do not evacuate the city. But many people cannot evacuate. This includes the patients and those courageous doctors and other healthcare workers dedicated to them at Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza City. This hospital normally can accommodate 700 patients, but today it is overwhelmed with more than 5,000. And beyond that, an additional 45,000 displaced Palestinians are crowded in around its grounds seeking shelter. And what about those who do make it to the south of Gaza? They still are not safe. On October 15th, a home in Deir al-Balah was reduced to rubble. The Nusayrat refugee camp was struck the next day. A residential building in Khan Yunis was struck that same day, and so was Rafah refugee camp. The Barej refugee camp was struck the day after that, and the day after that, a strike left a large crater in Khan Yunis. All of this, and many more strikes, are happening in the south, where people have been told to flee too. 12 of the 35 total hospitals in Gaza no longer are functioning at all, and the entire medical system is on the verge of collapse. After starving all of Gaza of all water, all food, all medicine, and all fuel for 13 days, 20 trucks of aid were finally allowed in on Saturday, October 21st. 14 more aid trucks made it in the day after that, and on Monday, 20 more made it in. But 20 trucks a day is a mere 4% of the aid that was coming into Gaza before this war broke out. And already at that time, 80% of the population of Gaza depended on this aid for their regular survival. That was before their homes were blown up, before their roads were bombed, before their fuel was cut off. 20 trucks a day now is like squeezing an eyedropper to quench an ocean of need. And all of this is going on even before Israel has launched its threatened ground invasion. Let's be clear. None of this horrendous human catastrophe has anything to do with the so-called right of Israel to defend itself against the Hamas attack of October 7th. That attack was reactionary and should be condemned by everyone. But Israel is now carrying out a monstrous crime against humanity on a scale and through means that are far beyond what Hamas could ever dream of. As Bob Avakian has put it, quote, Israel is a nuclear-armed military power, heavily supplied and supported by the dominant imperialist power in the world, the United States. Israel has for generations imposed apartheid oppression on the Palestinians, denying them basic rights, and especially with regard to the more than 2 million Palestinians in Gaza, half of them children. Israel has denied them even the means to live beyond the most minimal and desperate existence. And now Israel, with the full backing of the U.S. imperialists, is openly carrying out a genocide against the Palestinians. End quote. In simple terms, those who say I stand with Israel are really saying I stand with genocide. It is imperative that people in this country, in whose name this genocide is being carried out, act in determined opposition to all of this, and that people seriously look into and take up now the only real solution to all of this. A real revolution that overthrows and finally puts an end to the system of capitalism and imperialism that is driving these and so many other horrors here and around the world. So if you have been moved by any of what I have said today, then get into this revolution deeper. Watch the rest of today's episode of the RNL, Revolution Nothing Less show, and come back every week. Also, go to our website, revcom.us. Among other essential things you will find there is a special publication called Bastion of Enlightenment or Enforcer for Imperialism, The Case of Israel, and a new piece from Bob Avakian called Palestine, Israel, Imperialism, War, the Danger of Even Greater War, and Revolution. The future is pivoting on what we do. Do not stand aside. So this brings us to our final segment of today's show. Atlas Winfrey is going to introduce a discussion that followed a recent screening of the Bob Avakian interviews at a theater in Hollywood. You will hear Andy Z and myself, Sansara Taylor, in discussion with the moderator and filmmaker, David Zeiger.
Last week, we showed excerpts from the talkback that followed what was the first big screen theatrical showing of a special selection from the Bob Avakian interviews. And today we plan on showing you a bit more from that program. I was there at the Hudson Theater, and I can tell you, as someone who has watched the Bob Avakian interviews on YouTube many times, seeing it together with people in a theater is on a whole other level. It took a lot of work to bring together that diverse audience, made up of people from different parts of the city and different parts of the world that night. We RevComs fanned out across the city and really challenged people to confront not only the urgency and danger of the times we are in, with looming climate destruction, the threat of nuclear war, fascism on the march in this country, and now Israel unleashing a genocide on the people of Gaza, but also the need to engage revolutionary answers as put forward by the unparalleled revolutionary leader Bob Avakian. This is different than what most people, even people who deeply care, are right now thinking that they need to dig into. So all this work really mattered. Seeing BA together on the big screen really takes you to a different headspace. He breaks down why we need a revolution and why it's more possible now, and makes it so easy and clear to understand that anybody can get it. He breaks down how he sees people's potential, even when most people can't see it themselves. You learn about his whole personal journey of why and how he became a revolutionary and why he has never given up, all while breaking into song multiple times and repeatedly making you laugh. And then the filmmaker David Zeiger sat down with Andy and Sansara to ask big questions about how the revolution can grow, about the despair that so many people feel, and about the anti-communist prejudices that way too many people have. Before the discussion began, Andy opened up with a powerful statement about the genocidal assault on Gaza. And at the end of the discussion, David Zeiger spoke to the special responsibility that Jewish people have to speak out against this atrocity. This, together with the words of BA, brought an urgent sense of responsibility for the future to the theater. Then the energy and hope that got opened up through the program spilled into the cafe next door, and we stayed up talking with each other late into the evening. And all this was just a taste of the tremendous power of what can get opened up as people get into the interviews that we did right here on this show with Bob Avakian. And this is why we are so excited for the screenings of these interviews, with the next one planned on Sunday, November 5th at the New Parkway Theater in Oakland, California, and why it will be very important for people to wage the necessary struggle to make these screenings a real success, and for you to bring people together and watch these interviews wherever you are. Now, we want to bring you the last question and answer from David Zeiger to Sansara Taylor and Andy Z. Here David asks about how to deal with all the anti-communist prejudice out there.
To bring up one more point before we get into this. If and when there's a world war, it will be with two countries that, as far as the vast majority of people in this country know, are communist. This is the propaganda that's constantly, it's a combination of the propaganda that's put out there and the fact that these countries were communist, right? But for the majority, for what's in the zeitgeist is that that's what communism is, and who the hell would want to live in that? How do you confront that? I mean, this is the new communism comes on the backs of two revolutions in which more than half of humanity participated in and created these revolutions. Both of them are now just the opposite of what they were when they started. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that on a day-to-day basis? And I'm sure, you know, when folks go out with the new communism, you probably run into this constantly.
Well, I'll give a twofold answer, and one of them will echo what Andy just said. I think principally we need to go out with Bob Avakian and the new communism and let people meet this in the world as it is and encounter it. And when you watch these interviews, when you read BA's works, when you watch the Revolution Nothing Less show, when you go to the website revcom.us, and when you meet the revcoms out in the world, you should encounter people who are on fire with a liberating vision of how the world could be, including the profound breakthroughs that Bob Avakian has made. One of them we made a point of including of, you know, BA has rooted out of the communist movement the poisonous notion that the ends justify the means, and that your means of fighting have to be consistent with your liberating ends, that you can't be a revolution for revenge or, you know, payback, or the people who are on the bottom are now get to be on the top. What the state of Israel became, you know, Jewish people lived through the greatest horror, one of the greatest horrors in human history with the Holocaust. And then in the name of that, a section says, Israel, now we can do this to anybody else we want. Not what all Jewish people said, but anyway, BA has repudiated the ends justify the means. He's made other breakthroughs, and people have to encounter this and the strategy and the person and the leadership that we have and come into this revolution in the madness of today with the vision of the future. In that context, it's very important that we, and in that context, not as a stage first, but in that context that we say, first of all, most people have no idea what they're talking about communism. They've been lied to. They've been propagandized, they've been brainwashed, it's been put on them, it's institutionalized, it's funded, it's like everywhere. And so they don't know what they're talking about, and we need to set the record straight, even as we are making clear that what Bob Avakian has done is not just a repeat of those first revolutions you're talking about in the Soviet Union and in China. And so one of the things we're doing right now is we're doing a campus campaign and tour with Raymond Lada to go out, and it's literally called The Revolution. And now I'm going to say it's literally called and mess up the title. But it is against the new communist revolution we need up against the anti-communist brainwash you are getting. And it's to take that on and contrast it. And he has the goods, and he actually exposes, and we put it on the Revolution Nothing Less show, how the lies are manufactured and propagandized, including in the highest levels of academia and so-called rigorous knowledge in this country about how, you know, just garbage lies about Mao Zedong being murderous, not true. He was a leader of an emancipating revolution that doubled life expectancy in China, met the healthcare needs, the food needs. These were liberated women. These were liberating societies before they were reversed. But also, BA has gone further, and we have to do better and different in some significant ways, which is why it's important to go out with the new communism straight up and in that context take on the brainwash. It's actually a question. I will say this right now. It's one question that a lot of young people, not enough, but a lot of young people do have an ear for socialism right now, for anti-capitalism such that they understand it. And we have to fight to actually rip that open in the way it needs to be ripped open.
Well, I know you're looking at the watch and stuff. I know, because we want to hear from you in the cafe afterwards. People don't know what they're talking about. That's a very important thing. And look, these revolutions in the 20th century were tremendously liberating experiences. And they happened in countries that were extremely backward in terms of their economic development. And you just mentioned one factor there, the life expectancy in China going from 32 years to 68 years in just two decades.
65. But, I think it was 65.
65.
Yeah.
All right. But the point is, yes, there was those kinds of changes which make a big difference. But this was, in both revolutions, just to take one thing, women were emancipated in ways that had not happened in any other country to date at the time that that happened. Now, compared to some things today, maybe different. But I will say it's remarkable what was accomplished in these societies. And people need to learn about that. You know, when we went to school, we were taught that the slaves in America were happy and taken care of. Now, how many people believe that now? Almost nobody. Now, certainly the slaves and the descendants of slaves didn't think that, although some even did, played those roles in movies. So you've been told a false history, and there is that information that people can learn, and Raymond Lotta brings that. Right now we have a series on our website on the Great Leap Forward. So that's one aspect. The other thing is, the key thing is the new communism, and you know, time doesn't permit to actually go into more than you talked about the question of revenge, but on the entire process of having a constitution that can actually traverse the problem of that. When you make a revolution, people are part of it and they start to change, but they're still the same people they were before. And now that things get better for the most oppressed, they may want to stop right there. And not all the time. There's a whole segment of this interview where he talks about that why he wrote the Constitution is because under the new society, not everybody wants to go forward to continue to revolutionize society all the time. And how do you do that without coercing people into it by putting a gun to their back? This is an entirely different approach to how you would lead people to continue the revolution after the revolution to the point where we could emancipate all of humanity. This is something that is exhilarating. It is an unbelievable breakthrough in what a revolutionary society would be. And so, yeah, we got a lot of work to do right now to be able to flip the script on that people have been told. But, you know, you've been lied to by a lot of shit in this country. Okay, and I think people get a sense, you've been lied to about just about everything of importance. So what makes you think they told you the truth about the first stage of communism? Come on. Why, the only thing they told you the truth about is the only other system that stands against capitalism was no good. What if we tell to you, come up with an idea for a new system, and we wrote what capitalism actually is? People would look at that, Baba Vakis, they'd look at that and say, what the f*** is that? What kind of system is that where you go to work for somebody else, he gives you enough for the first 3 hours, then he takes everything else after that and then reinvests it to get more machinery to throw you out of work and move some of his plant overseas? What kind of system is that that depends on people being divided by race and by gender and all of that just to be able to exploit people here and around the world more? That's an insane way to organize society. But people have been lied to. They haven't been told, and I'm oversimplifying things, but not by that much. This is a crazy system, and you're told it's the best of, this is the greatest country in the earth. It's the only system it could be. It's eternal. And all these learned people say the same thing, when in fact, it's completely unnecessary. We could get beyond it, and people could learn to work and live together in a cooperative society that's going on to overcome all forms of oppression and exploitation. And that should be inspiring to people. And people had even an ounce of creativity, I mean, of curiosity, they would actually be interested in finding out about that. But we need all of you to make this a mass question. You know, I'll just say LA's a big city. We were able to bring this interview out to about four neighborhoods, maybe about 20 square miles out of 100 square miles. That's not enough. We've got to get this out over the whole country in the next year. We've got to get 10,000 people and then 100,000 people watching the RNL show, not 2,000, okay? We have to change this, and we need you to be part of that. So that's my pitch, but it's not just some sales pitch. It's actually the future of humanity that's at stake.
All right, this brings us to the end of another episode of The Michael Slate Show. We've covered a lot. We are living in such historic and high-stakes times. I hope that you got something out of today's program, and I want to thank you for tuning in and spending the hour with me or any portion of it. I want to thank Henry Carson, our assistant producer, and I want to send my love to Michael Slate and remind you that the problem is not human nature. It is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. I will talk to you next week.
Blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains. Just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night. While the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain.